Ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports.
Yeah.
Brought to you by the WBO, the World Boxing Organization.
How about that?
And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history.
Let's get him hard.
Pedro Fernandez.
Better grab me quick before my knees give way.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the multi-billion dollar sports byline studios in the city by the bay, San Francisco, California. Check it. The man was correct in that lofty introduction, as my name is Pedro Fernandez. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide, often imitated, but never duplicated. 35, 36, make that almost 37 years now of knocking out all bums. That's right, 37 years of radio. We'll be celebrating that in September 2020. Who would have thought when I did this show with Charles J. back in 1984 that he said, what are we going to call it? I said, well, why don't we call it Ring Talk? So we were doing this show with Charles J. in Florida and then Las Vegas. And we started this 15-minute show here in San Francisco on KEST, some little Vietnamese station. We were between a Filipino show and an all-Christian show. It was like a weird mix. Bottom line was my fans didn't work well with either of the groups. We had to move on, of course, to KMBR and then national syndication. There we have been since 1989, nationally syndicated around the world. Of course, now we come to you from the Sports Byline Studios, San Francisco, California. Saturdays and Sundays, 11 a.m. Pacific time. Now, let's talk about today's show. I'll bring in the retired HBO godfather in a couple of minutes. We'll talk about Mr. Larry Merchant. We'll hear from Daniel Dubois, of course, a heavyweight of note from the UK. He's about to fight Joe Joyce, my favorite heavyweight. In other words, if I made a comeback right now, I would want to fight Joe Joyce. I think I could beat Joe Joyce at an I'm ready to retire as far as like Social Security is concerned. I think I can come back and beat Joe Joyce. That's how bad Joe Joyce is. We'll hear from Joe Joyce. We'll also hear from Neil Magny, UFC fighter, and the ultimate preview. I'm talking about Lomachenko, Lomo, and Timo. Vasyl Lomachenko, of course, and Teofimo Lopez going at it for the lightweight championship, hooking it up in about a month on ESPN straight up. We'll hear from both of those guys. And Muhammad Ali and David Frost in a very controversial interview from 1974. Straight up, you're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, baby, but you know that.
Comes the decision now. Let's listen.
Clarity in the world of professional boxing is spelled WBO. That's right. The World Boxing Organization is boxing's only transparent sanctioned body. You can follow the WBO on Facebook or check out their website, WBOboxing.com. That's WBOboxing.com. The World Boxing Organization.
Come on, the early rounds, but like I said, he brings excellent condition and he's determined.
Why didn't you go after him to try to knock him out when you knocked him down early in the third round?
I said, why get callous if I've been training for 2 months?
Here's the knockdown. Describe it to us as you see it.
Well, like I told Jimmy, the 1-2 with you, I'm gonna get him all the time. But I wasn't gonna get overexcited and play myself cheap. I said, I'll knock him out early if it happens. If not, if it's necessary, I go 12 rounds, and I did.
Did you go to school, so to speak, on what happened to Rosario when he knocked him down and then got knocked out himself?
No, because I knocked down a lot of fighters that still took my time. I'm just getting seasoned through every fight, and I'm pound for pound, I'm the best fighter pound for pound in the world. Bring him on. Bring him on. Mancini, I don't respect your opinion. Come on, baby. So I can knock you out.
Well, who are some of the fighters?
Bernard Willeker. You could get some, baby. You could get some, too. Brian Boone. Jimmy Holmes, all your come on with it, baby. Yeah, buddy.
Yeah, buddy.
Let's hear from you, Larry.
What about Aaron Pryor?
Aaron Pryor, come on with it, baby. I got faith in you. You bounce back. I know you. Come on, baby. Come on with it. It's macho time.
The Harlem Hector Camacho. Passed away on my birthday, 2012, 11-24-2012. Of course, I was with him in 1999. We're in Puerto Rico, San Juan, Puerto Rico. We're going to throw this fight. We got this casino backing us up with all this money. I mean, all this money. They were throwing money at us left and right. Harold Smith was running the show. It was going to be the main event. It was going to be Hector Camacho against former WBC welterweight champion Jorge Vaca. Of course, this was November 27, 1999. Essentially, it was Thanksgiving in Puerto Rico, and they really don't celebrate Thanksgiving much in Puerto Rico. Anyway, bottom line was we're at the arena. We're kicking it, and we've shot a couple of the prelims. I've done the open for the show. Myself and Hugh Millay have done the open for the show. In other words, we've laid it out. It's already on videotape. We're waiting for the participants, you know, to get rolling. So we've got a couple of prelim fights going on, and Harold Smith, the promoter, comes to me and says, Pedro, we got a problem. I said, we got a problem? What do you mean? He goes, well, Hector don't want to come down. I said, what do you mean Hector don't want to come down? He goes, well, Camacho's all coked out in his hotel room and he won't come downstairs. I said, what are you talking about? He goes, Pedro, Hector's not coming to the fight. I said, and if he doesn't come to the fight, I'm going to have to cancel this right now. And if I cancel it, nobody gets paid. And nobody includes you. I said, I've been here 3 months working on this promotion. What are you talking about? So anyway, I hustle off to the hotel, tuxedo, still wearing a tux, obviously on air. Hustle off to the hotel, and I'm banging on the penthouse door of Camacho's apartment, his little apartment in this hotel casino, and I'm banging on the door. You know, Hector, come on out. Hector, come on out. Hector, come on out, blah, blah, blah. He ain't coming. He ain't answering the door, but I'm not leaving. I'm done banging. I mean, there's like $5,000 to $7,000 on the line for me. I've been working at this gig for a long time. I'm not going to leave Puerto Rico without any money. In fact, maybe my air ticket won't be any good if these guys don't get paid. So anyway, I'm not going to give up. Bottom line is Camacho opens the door. Obviously, he leads me in. We sit down at the kitchen table. There's a mountain of cocaine on the table. He's talking, blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to go fight. I'm not going to go fight. Basically, I almost broke down into tears and told him, listen, man, my ex-wife is going to kill me because I won't have the child support when I get back. What are you trying to do, get me thrown in jail? Blah, blah, blah. So I appeal to the guilty side of him. I threw some guilt at him. And the bottom line is he took one last big snort of cocaine, and he said, okay, let's go. So we went downstairs, we got in a limo, and I got him to the arena. The fight ended, I think, in the second round with a disqualification or some headbutt that Camacho pulled a foul. But the bottom line is he showed up for the fight, and thank God we all got paid, man. We all got paid. But Hector Camacho, may he rest in peace. The Harlem Heckler, confused guy, cocaine was his downfall, no doubt about it. As far as his boxing career, his personal life, and his death, it was all about cocaine, Colombian dust. So we take it from Colombian dust to the retired HBO godfather in Southern California, talking about Mr. Larry Merchant. And Larry, how are you today, sir?
Good morning, Pedro, and I'm doing fine, going through the newspapers and having other things I have to do on this Sunday.
Okay, I'm going to hit you up with the controversy right away then. The other day, you know me, I'm a former police officer, you know that, and the other day I saw a film of a man getting shot in the back 7 times, in the same town, and a couple days later, I saw a guy walk down the street with an automatic rifle, an AR-15, a white guy. The first guy was black. This guy walked down the middle of the street, shot a couple people, killed a couple people, got up and walked past the police with an AR-15 in his hand, and then he was able to go like 23 miles back to his house, wherever he lived in Illinois. What I'm trying to say is that Godfather, something's wrong. Even with that picture right there, something's wrong.
I think what we're finding out through the technology of iPhones is how things have gone for centuries for minorities, and particularly for black people. We didn't see it. We didn't know whether the police were making it up or not. And now we're seeing it. And that's had a profound effect nationally and even internationally.
You know, what motivated me to become a policeman was the fact that these two cops, Adams and Wohler, kicked my ass a few times for riding my mini bike without a license. In other words, instead of giving me a ticket, these guys got off on slapping me around. So I said to myself, I'm going to become a cop and I'm going to save the world. So I joined the San Francisco Police Department, and this guy Adams turns out to be one of my physical education coordinators at the Hall of Justice. So I read him the Riot Act and told him like it was, blah, blah, blah. The other guy, Wohler, who would kick my ass, I guess he hit me several times. I mean, for vehicle violations, not having a driver's license.
What's a mini bike?
It's a little small motorcycle without, you know, like these kids are driving around these little scooters.
I see.
It was a scooter. So he actually bruised me up one time over riding this scooter at the age of 15. Anyway, the bottom line was, he had shot two people. He was a bad cop. He had shot two people and killed two people. And then I was reading the newspaper, I guess about 8 or 10 years ago, and I'm looking. It says cop commits suicide, and it turns out that Woller had killed himself. So if there was any good thing that came out of that cop Woller's life was that he ended it himself, because what a bad guy. He was him alone, just him alone, Godfather, convinced me that I needed to become a San Francisco policeman.
Well, apparently, the kind of entanglements, I'll call it, that the police get into brings out the worst in some of them.
I could say that without a doubt. I mean, and unfortunately now, back in my day, we got out of the car and we talked to people. I mean, I knew everybody in the neighborhoods where I worked and things like that. And no longer is that the case. Basically, it's answer the phone. In other words, somebody calls, you go out and see them and this and that. But people don't know who the police officers are in their neighborhood. They don't know the beat officers or anything like that. So it sort of depersonalized the police.
Yeah, it's us against them instead of us with them.
Good point. But being a former cop, Godfather, you know how hard it is for me to watch these films on TV and think that this is, I mean, I actually thought, now I may be naive, but I was a young kid, I actually thought that I could change the world. If I became a policeman, I could change the world. And I changed the world for a few people. I figured that out, and that's where I took my satisfaction. But as far as changing the world as a whole, you know, that wasn't happening.
How many marches for social justice have I lived through being an old man? How many marches that we thought was going to lead to something, but it's led to this point. And we'll find out if it leads further into some real political action.
Okay, and before I go to the commercial break, and we'll switch gears after break and talk boxing, the fact that this young man that killed two people has now raised over, that a Christian organization raised over $200,000 for his defense, what does that say about what does that say about white Christians in this country?
Well, it doesn't matter to them that their preachers often don't live the way they preach.
Good point, Jerry Falwell Jr. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking at the world of boxing. We switch subjects. We go from today to the world of boxing right after the break. For us, we'll be spending some more time with the retired HBO godfather, Larry Merchant. The text line is available. You can text us here in the studio. The number, 1-415-275-1613. Once again, 415-275-1613. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Larry Merchant's the guest.
I guarantee you there's no problem.
This room that really gives a rat's about candlelight dinners. Women seem to think we like them, but you know, it's never our idea. I mean, does he have them with his friends when you're not around? Absolutely not. During the Super Bowl, okay, Bob, you get the Doritos, I'll get the candles. First down, yes! You make a candlelight dinner for a guy, believe me, he's sitting there squirming in his chair. I can't see the goddamn potato, this sucks. The hell did she make? What is this, a turd, a piece of corn? Honey, at least put on the TV, get some light over here. So romantic. It's right up there with taking a bath or a shower together. Cannot tell you how many times I'll come home at night, the wife will have a little bath made. She doesn't get it. She'll have candles in the bathroom like some kind of voodoo sacrifice. What are you doing?
Oh, I made us a bath.
You made us a bath. You ever see me take a bath? No. I don't take a bath. I can't even get my own fat butt in the tub. without my feet halfway up the wall. We've tried this before. It doesn't work. I always get the side with the faucet in my back. Ow! Ow! Yeah, honey, I'd love to get a hard-on. There doesn't seem to be any room. Taking a shower together. That really sucks, fellas. See, women like that because they're the ones under the hot water. We're standing there like a moron with a shriveled up f***ing soap in our face. This is terrific, honey. I got no penis. I got shampoo in my eyes. Let me know when there's no more hot water. It'll be my turn. I'll be right over here. I'm cold. I'm naked. My f*** looks like a stack of buttons.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
How about that guy?
My old personal buddy, Bobby Slayton, I thought we would add a little humor there after that bummer of a segment there, talking about the reality of going on, what's going on here in the world in 2020. Now, a week ago, Dillian White was knocked stiff. I mean, knocked stiff by Alexander Povetkin. It was a nice move. Povetkin dipped to the left, threw an uppercut in between the gloves, caught Dillian White right on the chin, and I mean, he was asleep. He hit the ground asleep. But this is a guy that's tested positive not once, not twice, but thrice or three times for Flintstone vitamins. You know, on this show, we call Flintstone vitamins, I mean, we call steroids or performance-enhancing drugs Flintstone vitamins. So he gets knocked out, and now, of course, they're talking about opening up the heavyweight picture, meaning that he was supposed to be the number one contender and he was going to fight Deontay Wilder for the W. No, take that back, Deontay Wilder, Tyson Fury for the WBC belt, but now they've sort of moved that to the side. So I asked the godfather, Larry Merchant, does this mean that Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua fight next?
I don't know whether this fight directly influenced whether that fight's going to happen next or not. These things have to do with money and rematch clauses and television and all of that great stuff. Not necessarily what the public wants to see.
Question
and
for
I,
you.
And I get that.
Okay. I got a question for you. You know, in 1971, I was a young lad, and I remember the world stopped for the Muhammad Ali-Joe Frazier fight, the first fight, stopped to an extent for the second fight. The third fight, it just came to a complete halt. I mean, the entire – if you looked out on the streets of San Francisco, there was nobody in the streets. I mean, it was like the quarantine, like the COVID-19, unlike many years prior. How many times in life or in your experience – has boxing, have fights stopped the world, has the world stopped and take notice? Can you name four or five times where the world's really stopped to take notice of super events?
I'm not old enough to say that the Dempsey-Tunney fights stopped the world. Communications were different back 80 to 90 years ago. But they were major events that filled the big stadiums, 100,000 in Philadelphia. Joe Louis and Max Schmeling had the same kind of political undertones and overtones before World War I. An American champion having a rematch against the guy who beat him, and there was all kinds of political actions over the fight. Mm-hmm. And then we go to the era of Ali, who was a one-man international political force, and not all of his fights were major events. But the first fight against Frazier is the greatest event that I ever covered. I like to say that every Eskimo and every igloo in the world knew that that fight was happening. It was huge. They were undefeated champions and so on. Tyson had a very short career on top of the world where he was a must-see athlete. And back in the day, Armstrong and Robinson, I covered both of Robinson's fights with Carmen Basilio, and they were major events, one in New York and one in Chicago. I'll have to think. I mean, Ali had many such fights. His fights with George Foreman, his fights with Joe Frazier.
Yep. But since then, I mean, did Chavez, was Chavez one of those guys that could make the world stop? Probably not. I mean, he made Mexico stop, but did the world stop? I mean, did he have
But the boxing world, I'm talking about fights that transcended.
I understand.
The boxing world. But Chavez was he was the jewel of Mexican fighters and a heroic figure who represented his fans and was an important force in getting Mexicans on television and having that great run they had in the early 200s. 2000.
Yeah.
Oscar and a couple of his opponents, including Chavez, was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of it. I think Manny Pacquiao was an internet. National supernova, and which rarely happens, at least from the American point of view, with fighters from far away. He was like a Filipino version of Ali, in that he became this heroic and much admired fighter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure I've missed a number of these things. Those are the ones that come to mind.
Okay, and I notice, and I wouldn't have brought him up either, but I noticed you didn't bring up Floyd Mayweather, even though he sold the tickets, he sold the pay-per-view numbers that he did. I told you this before, and maybe I'm repeating myself. I'm sorry if I'm redundant. But I thought he pulled off the biggest con since Robert Redford and Paul Newman in the movie The Sting. And you thought it was maybe the biggest con of all time. But the bottom line is, I don't put him in there with great fights and great fighters. Great boxer, not great fighter.
Well, he didn't make many great. He had some great performances, but And his fight with Pacquiao did transcend the boxing world and the sports world.
Okay.
But it just did. Okay,
then why is it, and I've seen this, other people have said, I think Teofimo Lopez said it as well, even though Mayweather won that fight, if I had to live with a legacy, I'd rather live with a legacy of Manny Pacquiao than I would Floyd Mayweather.
In my mind, my twisted mind, I think of Manny Pacquiao as the best fighter of his time and Floyd Mayweather as the best boxer of his time.
That being said, Godfather, say hello to the Godmama. I hope she's well. Give her a big kiss for me. You have a great week and stay safe and we'll talk soon.
See you later.
I am so thrilled each and every time you spend some time with us. I'm blessed. I'm like a little kid sometimes. And that's Larry Merchant, man. I mean, here's a guy that I used to watch on TV in like the 70s, and then we met in the 80s, and we've sort of been partners since then. So the Godfather, the retired HBO Godfather, he gives me goosebumps every once in a while when I talk to him. It just does because, when I go back and I remember him and I being in different spots around the world and we'd always talk after fights, like at these HBO parties and this and that. You know, we had a lot of back and forth. You know, those were the good old days. HBO Championship Boxing. Straight up, you're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. We'll talk results. We'll do some UFC after the break. In hour number two, we'll go into the weekend's boxing results. 2 hours of Ring Talk today, live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, Satellite Radio, and the American Forces Network. This is Ring Talk.
Here comes the decision now. Let's listen.
Clarity in the world of professional boxing is spelled WBO. That's right, the World Boxing Organization is boxing's only transparent sanctioned body. You can follow the WBO on Facebook or check out their website, WBOboxing.com. That's WBOboxing.com. The World Boxing Organization.
Ladies and gentlemen, after five rounds, we go to the judges' scorecards for a decision. Eric Corwin scores the contest 48-47. Edgar Solly Amato scores it 49-46. Munoz. And Derek Cleary scores the contest 48-47 for the winner by split decision, Frankie the Edson Edgar.
He's got a little bit of a limp, but congratulations, Frankie, on a huge win in a career full of them. How do you feel about those crazy 25 minutes, man?
We're going to call that a Jersey Shore pimp limp, my man. Johnny, man, it's good to be on the winning side. That was a hell of a fight. Paige was a stud. I heard a lot of MFers barking that I'm old, I'm slow. I definitely should prove them all wrong. I still got some fight in this tank, baby, and we're going to make a run at 35. He was number five, and that might put me right in the top five. Three-way classes. I'm showing I could compete with the best at 38 years old. I don't want to hear nothing from anybody.
Yeah, I think that this performance will go a long way in terms of silencing some of those doubters. But I have to ask, over 25 minutes, I mean, you look great physically. How did you feel like your body was able to compete down in this bantamweight division?
If anything, better than I was at the other weights.
Wow.
I didn't carry any other weight. I mean, he chipped me with some good leg kicks. I believe I checked a bunch of them, but I'm hoping his leg hurts a little bit too.
Yeah.
But, yeah, man, John, when this is done, it's kind of silly that we got to be all far apart. I'm going to come give you a hug, baby.
I know. I want to come give you a hug as well. In terms of your championship trajectory, a lot of people who listen to you here during fight week heard you say, I'm not here to take part. I want to make a run at 135 pounds. And to do that over the number five guy in the world, I got to think this opens up a lot of opportunities for you now.
Yeah, man. You know, it's got my feet wet. You know, I think the sky's the limit for myself. I didn't look slow in there. Pedro's a top dog, and that makes me a top dog. TR, baby. TR. We back.
You're definitely back, and I know your boys and your wife are out here in Las Vegas, so you can go give them a hug. But the future may be in the Hall of Fame. The present's still very relevant. Congrats, my man, on a big win.
Yeah, I just want to thank my team, Chris, Mark, Steve, Ricardo, Ali, everybody back home, my wife, my kids. I miss you. I love you. Can't wait to see my daughter. I've been FaceTiming every day.
Yeah.
My boys are going to celebrate tonight. Some cheeseburgers.
There he is. There is only one Frankie Edgar, and he gets his 18th UFC win tonight over 25 hard minutes against Pedro Munoz.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Last week, the former lightweight champion Frankie Edgar dropped 20 pounds, went down from 155 to 135 pounds, and beat Pedro Munoz on a split decision. The scores were 48-47 twice for Mr. You got to give him some props. 38 years old and dropping weight. I mean, it's usually the opposite. As you get older, you have to put on weight. You can't take weight off. It's almost impossible. And this guy's done the impossible, because I thought he was going to get lit up like a White House Christmas tree against Pedro Munoz. Munoz had like over 800 Brazilian jiu-jitsu matches. 800 matches. So I figured they'd get on the ground, you know, Munoz going to eat him up, right? Well, Frankie kept it standing up the whole time. He was like, just outbox him. Dirty punches here and there. Some dirty punches as well. It's dirty boxing, they call it. But the bottom line is Frankie Edgar, former lightweight champion, now rocking and rolling at 135 pounds. So we give him the very best. We give him accolades, man, because I really wrote him off. And I figured at 38 years old, he's just going to get hurt. And he didn't get hurt. He looked really good. Took some severe leg kicks. Munoz threw some, punished him, I mean, at some points and times. But I thought the split decision was just. Last night, Alexander Rakov beat up Anthony Smith. Of course, unanimous decision. Anthony Smith, former light heavyweight title challenger, I believe, with John Jones for the 205-pound UFC championship. It was a shutout across the board, 30-26, 30-27, 30-27. It was a three-round main event and not a five-round main event. The USA, I guess, has the option of doing that because it's their show. I guess they could have a one-round main event if they want to. Anyway, in the co-feature, this was pretty cool. Neil Magny beat Robbie Lawler. Robbie Lawler, the former champion, of course, it was a decision that was unanimous, 30-27, 3-0 across the board. I mean, Magny was a journeyman. Some people think he was a journeyman fighter, and I thought he was being put in this fight to get lit up by Robbie Lawler. Well, it turned out to be the other way around.
Ladies and gentlemen, after three rounds, we go to the judges' scorecards for a decision. All three judges score this contest 30-27 for the winner. By unanimous decision, the Haitian sensation, Neil Magny.
First of all, congratulations, man. And I imagine it's got to be a feather in the cap when you get to face a legend like Robbie Lawler. How are you feeling after that victory, my friend?
Man, like you said, it's definitely a feather in the cap being a legend like Robbie Lawler. I mean, this guy's done amazing things in the sport throughout his time here, and it was literally an honor for me to go in there and face him tonight. Feels good to actually be able to execute a game plan and come out victorious for a guy like Robbie Lawler.
Yeah, and with that victory, man, you are two fights away from being tied with George St. Pierre for the most wins all time. I mean, how does that feel to be right there with that legend in your division as well?
Man, it feels great. I mean, leading up this week, I was being put in categories of guys like Matt Hughes, George St. Pierre, and here tonight fighting Robbie Lawler. Man, I'm doing the right things and I'm going the right direction. So it's a matter of time before I'm considered a world champion, or I am a world champion.
Yeah, and Neil, what impressed me so much tonight was just how you stifled the offense of Robbie Lawler and implemented your game plan the entire time. I mean, what was the game plan coming here? Because it looked like you worked it to a T.
So coming in, the game plan was to stay real active on the outside, force him to throw heavy shots, miss, and as soon as he does, clinch him up, get him to the ground, and look for the submission.
In a row for you. I cannot wait to see you get back in the octagon. Beautiful performance, my friend. Go enjoy it.
Awesome, dude. Thank you so much.
Well, guess what? That's three in a row. Li Jingliang, he beat, of course, that was back in March of 2020. He's had three fights this year. Anthony Rocco Martin, he beat him as well in June. Of course, last night beating Robbie Lawler. He thrashed Robbie Lawler. I mean, Lawler didn't, stealing a line from Bill O'Neill, a boxing historian, he didn't win a minute. He just didn't win a minute. This wasn't happening. Rest of the card, so a little bit ho-hum, I guess, to an extent, because there's not a whole lot of stars in the UFC. I've told you this before. Magny stole the show, without a doubt. I think that, you know, his win was more significant than Rackick's win, because Anthony Smith just didn't look like he was there to fight. It was like he was a different guy, like he evolved from one person to another, from an aggressive, all-out killer to a guy that was sort of like passive and taking it. That was like a metamorphosis right in front of my eyes. I wasn't ready to believe, but Anthony Smith faltered greatly last night in that light heavyweight main event. The women's flyweight bout, Alexa Grasso defeated Ji Yong Kim. It was unanimous, not across the board. These women hooking it up at 125 pounds. And, of course, there was a featherweight fight on the card. The main card, ESPN Plus, Ricardo Llamas, pretty good fighter, defeated Bill Lago with the unanimous, not across the board. In other words, the first four fights on the card, there were 10 fights in all. First four fights were submissions. The last six fights were decisions. Yikes, man. That's a lot of rounds after watching the world of the UFC, okay? Next big fight on the UFC, as far as the schedules are concerned, you got to give it to this guy. He's a Donald Trump guy. He's willing to admit it, and he's basically come right out and said, you know, racism isn't a bad thing for him, and Kobe Covington has got his tail kicked for that. But now he's going to come back and take on Tyrone Woodley. Woodley is a guy that didn't look too good in his last fight. It's like he looked a bit passive. I think he's a bit done. I think that Covington, because of his aggressiveness, although Tyrone's got some good skills, I think that Kobe Covington, because of his aggressiveness, might win that fight. As far as the wrestler's schedule is concerned this year, he's not a whole lot to get hot on. You know what I mean? Holly Holm, you want to watch Holly Holm fight again? October the 3rd, she's coming back. It'll be on ESPN. UFC Fight Night on ESPN. And, of course, Khabib going to take on Justin Gaethje. That's going to go on UFC 254, October 24th, 2020. Now, a fight that's a pretty good fight, but I think we're involving a guy with Flintstone vitamins. You know how I feel about Flintstone vitamins. Man, you know, I mean, I cheated. When I boxed, I cheated. Here's how I cheated, okay? My mother used to sneak coffee into me espresso into me. She would sneak espresso into she. I'm serious. She would just. That's what she would come just before the fight. She'd have a little cup, and I would have espresso, and boom. And that was like that was my drug. That's what I cheated with. That's all I cheated with. My body was absolutely clean. Okay, there was no such thing as performance enhancing drugs or anything like that point in time. But now. It's very prevalent, especially in fighters from Brazil. I don't care what you say. People say, ah, Pedro, why are you throwing shade on Brazil? Well, come on. Christine Cyborg Santos, of course, the greatest women's fighter as far as mixed martial arts was concerned until she got annihilated by Amanda Nunes in like less than a round. She was on the juice. There was no doubt about it. She finally got caught by the California State Athletic Commission. I mean, she looked more man. What did Dana White say about her? She looked like Anderson Silva in drag. I thought that was a bit cold, but, you know, she didn't look too feminine. I'm talking about Chris Cyborg Santos. Anyway, steroids are not cool, and I think this guy, Paola Costa, this monster from Brazil, and he's a good-looking, pretty boy. I mean, he's pretty good. 13 wins, 13 fights, 11 knockouts, one submission, one decision win. He can punch. He's an amazing guy as far as finishing guy is concerned. Of course, the champion, Israel Adesuna, very good fighter. I mean, comes to us from Lagos, Nigeria. They call him the last style bender. He's now living in Auckland, New Zealand. Got a decent record. I mean, a fantastic record. Look at it. Even as a pro boxer, he was like 5-1. And I think he lost that one fight by knockout. Lost that one fight by decision. As a kickboxer, he was 75-5. As a mixed martial artist, he is 19-0. 19-0. Something's got to give here, folks. Something's got to give. This main event's going to rock. There's just no doubt about it. I mean, both these undefeated guys, they don't like each other. And, you know, Israel has admitted or professed on television that he thinks that Costa's on steroids. He's on juice. I think he's on juice. I mean, any guy. Plus, get this. Is this an advantage or is this bad for the sport? He weighs 220 pounds when he starts training. He gets down to 185 pounds, okay? And then he comes back up to like 205 pounds come fight time. Is it fair for a guy to carry an extra 20 pounds, even though he's made the weights, even though he's followed all the so-called rules set up by the athletic commissions and the different sanctioning bodies as far as MMA is concerned? But he gains 20 pounds after the weigh-in. Do you think that's fair? And why are we having weigh-ins then if a guy can gain 20 pounds afterwards? Because I got to tell you, I fought guys who were bigger than me, and that was the problem, the strength factor, the body mass factor. It wasn't boxing ability. I mean, you could outbox these guys, but they were just bigger across the shoulders. They were stronger. That's why you have weight classes. That's why in boxing, I mean, we start off like 105 pounds, 108 pounds, 112 pounds, 115 pounds, 118 pounds. The UFC, we start off like at 115, we 125, 135, 145. What I'm trying to tell you is these weight classes are because people are of different size. So when you have one guy that's extremely big and able to make 155 pounds, or in Paulo Costa's case, 185 pounds, is able to make that weight, and it's sort of unnatural when he goes back and blooms up another 20 pounds before the fight, I just don't think that's cool because you're not supposed to be fighting a 205-pounder. In other words, we're fighting for the middleweight championship of the UFC, not the light heavyweight championship. And I'll say this time and time again because I was a disciplined fighter who never missed weight. Okay, I mean, I never missed weight. It was tough sometimes. I remember a couple times having to run in the morning and things like that, run in the morning. I remember Eric the Prince Martin, may he rest in peace. Of course, he was a former ESPN boxing champion, did some good stuff in the world of boxing, but he told me, blood, you got to lose that weight the night before. And he was right. I had to lose that weight the night before because why would I get up the morning of the fight? You try to do it the morning of the fight, you just can't do it. But man, I miss Eric, and I made the weight. So what I'm trying to say is if I can make the weight, other guys can make the weight, and you should be able to hold the weight, and you shouldn't be able to gain 25 pounds after a weigh-in. I think that's totally unfair. In fact, it reeks. If that isn't a rigged sport where you've got a guy outweighing another guy by 25 pounds in a weight class designation, what isn't? You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Little Cuba Gooding to the break. Let me tell you about Cuba. Cuba Sr. and I, we had some fun together over at Kimball's East in Emeryville, California. I was talking to him about his son, and he was telling me about his son, the Academy Award winner, and this and that. So Cuba Gooding and I had some fun one night out in the parking lot, talking, you know, just having a good time, talking boxing and music as well. And then I meet Cuba Gooding Jr. at the Contender finale, and he wants to talk about his dad. So his dad was sort of cool talking about both guys. Junior, Senior, may the late Senior rest in peace. We'll talk about Cuba Gooding Senior. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Main ingredient to the break.
Ooh, falling in love is such an easy thing to do, and there's no guarantee that the one you love is gonna love you. Than any ocean, it clouds your mind with emotion.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
That's a hell of a fight. Pedro's a stud.
Hitsville, USA. Check it out. Grand Boulevard, Detroit, Michigan. Loved it, man. Just loved it. Every time I went to Detroit, I hung out at Motown. Heck, you know, man used to say to me, where are you going? Going down to Motown. Talk with the funeral directors next door. Talk about the old days, Motown Records. Hitsville, USA. If you get a chance to go to Detroit, or you're going through Detroit, or you live in Detroit and you've never been there, check out Hitsville, USA. It's got some great classic Motown moments there at the Motown Museum on Grand Boulevard in Detroit, Michigan. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking to the world of boxing, MMA, of course. The Teofimo Lopez Lomachenko fight, of course, that's the biggest fight of the year, no doubt about that. 50-0 against what? 14-1. You're going to rock and roll on October 17th. Of course, coming to us, I believe, from take that back. They're going to try to put. They haven't got a site for this. It was going to be in Vegas. It was going to be in Madison Square Garden. I guess they're going to put this in the bubble in Las Vegas. But the bottom line is, this will be a super fight. We will go in that in depth with both guys in hour number two. Daniel Dubois, winner yesterday. Of course, he will be here as well. Of course, he's in line to fight Joe Joyce, the one heavyweight from the UK that I think I can come back and beat right now, out of shape. I kid you not. And I would give him the 70 pounds. That's how bad Daniel Dubois is. And, of course, Muhammad Ali on racism, on equality, on integration, on different ethnic groups, the whole nine yards. Ali rocks and rolls with David Frost at about 40 minutes past the hour. That's hour number two. What I'm trying to tell you is this is Ring Talk Live Worldwide, hour number one. Hour number two is upcoming. Of course, hour number two, as I said, will feature all those guests. And we'll delve into the world of the USC just for a moment. Bottom line is it's a boxing hour upcoming on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network. You can leave us a text on the text line. The studio text line is 415-275-1613. That's 415-275-1613. And in hour number two, I will have time to take phone calls. I usually don't take them, but I'll have time to take some phone calls in hour number two. So if you'd like to join us on the toll-free, you can. 1-800-878-7529. The toll-free listener line for hour number two, Ring Talk Live Worldwide. 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. And this is for my buddy Greg Doxie. We're missing you, baby. We had a funeral service in the Golden Gate Park yesterday. Greg was class. Stay tuned. Hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide coming at you.